The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. All right, guys, we aren't wasting any time today. We are jumping right into part two of Robert Breedlove's piece, Masters and Slaves of Money. And if you have not listened to yesterday's episode, that was part one, and this is not going to make any sense because we are jumping right into the middle of it. We will close this out, and I have a little bit of commentary at the end. Don't forget to support the show with swanbitcoin.com/guy to get your Bitcoin savings plan and $10 free to start you off with my referral link. But let's go ahead and dive back into Masters and Slaves of Money. Stealing Time. Quote,
there is one kind of robber whom the law does not strike at, and who steals what is most precious to men, time.
Napoleon Bonaparte. Many mistakenly blame capitalism for the myriad economic problems in the world. However, at the heart of every modern economy is an institution of socialism, the central bank. In a primitive sense, the first man who dug a hole to shelter himself from the weather was the first capitalist, and the man who violently encroached on his tiny territory for his own selfish purposes was the first socialist. Capitalism simply means everyone has exclusive rights to the fruits of their own labor. In other words, everyone owns their own time. True capitalists are free to trade any valuables they invest their time to create, goods, services, or knowledge, with other self-owned people doing the same. Socialism, on the other hand, entails that governments, aka other people, own a greater or lesser portion of your time, the pound of flesh they take through conscription, taxation, and inflation. Socialistic fiat currency is the lifeblood of state tyranny. To comprehend just how colossal the central banking system of time theft has become, let's take a close look at the Fed. Using annual wage data from the Social Security Administration, changes in U.S. M2 money supply, and assuming 2,000 average annual working hours per worker, we arrive at some startling figures. By dividing the growth in the U.S. dollar supply by the average hourly wage each year in dollars, we calculate a proxy for the hours stolen from society through USD supply expansion. Stealing an average of 7.6% working hours per year since 1981. Bureaucrats at the Fed have managed to scalp nearly 1 trillion hours off the backs of hardworking people. Assuming each person works an average of 2,000 hours per year, this is the equivalent to enslaving 11.7 million people for 40 years straight. This implicit taxation via inflation is in addition to all explicit taxes imposed by the U.S. government, all of which are acts of outright socialism. Unless transactions are made by consensual and willing market participants, then exchange is extortive. This is a central tenet of free market capitalism. Time stolen by the Fed since 1981 is 341% more per year than the transatlantic slave trade. With 23.4 billion hours stolen annually, the Fed could, in theory, build 2.3 Great Pyramids each year. In terms of absolute human time stolen per year, fiat currency is the largest pyramid scheme and institution of slavery in human history.
Quote, civil disobedience becomes a sacred duty when the state has become lawless or corrupt.
Mahatma Gandhi. When we stop conceiving of central banking as an economics story, and we start to see it as a crime story, we are beginning to get the true picture. Capitalism is established in truth, hard work, delayed gratification, and honest trade, whereas socialism is founded in falsehood, bureaucratizing, propagandizing, and theft. Like counterfeit agribeads and panos, counterfeit dollars are also used to mobilize military efforts, which before fiat required explicit taxation or borrowing to finance. Socialistic money is the stealth funding source of evil. It has been used to finance every dictator, world war, and internment camp in human history. In the 20th century alone, fiat currency-funded governments murdered over 169 million people, a modern mega-atrocity called democide. History is clear. Enforced enactment of the fiat currency lie worldwide leads to loss of life on a monstrous scale. Said simply, socialism is fraud, and those who remain silent on the truth of central banking are complicit in its criminality. As Nassim Taleb succinctly states this ethic, quote, "If you see fraud and you do not say fraud, you are a fraud." The central planning of money is not a new idea. In Marx's 1848 Manifesto to the Communist Party, measure number 5 reads, quote, "Centralization of credit in the hands of the state, by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly," end quote. Straight out of Marx's playbook, there is nothing capitalist at all about central banking. It is an anti-capitalist organization, so let us speak of it truthfully. Central banking is monetary socialism, an institution of financial slavery. Further, Karl Marx was a known racist. His socialistic system of central banking is solely designed to extract wealth from those the state deems to be, quote, inferior. It is little surprise, then, that an institution centered on Marx's philosophy has mutated into a racist slave master. Slave masters seek to steal the benefits of work without making the requisite sacrifices. Across trading societies, gold was favored as money because it required proof of work to obtain, an unforgeable costliness that could not be counterfeited, and therefore self-represented the collective sacrifices made to procure it. Work is a noble pursuit, as it carries us closer to the timelessness of God, since all innovations are just productivity enhancers, instruments for accomplishing greater results within the same expanse of time. Theft is the opposite, a twisting of the moral fabric of reality to serve the present ego in defiance of the eternal God. Attempts to twist reality in this way always snap back to devastate those who try. Our only salvation from this deceit is the truth. Money is a social construct created to sacrifice time now and store it for later enjoyment. Debt is created by enjoying now at the cost of later sacrifice. Real money is the final extinguisher of debt. Fiat currency is oxymoronic to the concept of money, since it is born by borrowing. Accordingly, fiat currency-fueled economies have spent over a century gorging on debt, and the day of reckoning is at hand. Economic reality demands its later sacrifices paid, explaining why governments are on the edge of bankruptcy, morally and financially, today. An integral element of the social contract. The time we spend serving society today must earn us money redeemable for equivalent services from it in the future. When this intertemporal trust arrangement breaks down due to inflation, society slides into disintegration. Fiat currency is a supreme instrument of evil in the world, a weapon of intergenerational disposition wielded by wily slave masters over unsuspecting subjects. Tweet by Robert Breedlove. Fiat currency is centered on proof of theft, as measured by its money supply inflation rate. Bitcoin is based on proof of work, as measured by its hash rate. Theft is dishonest and demoralizing for both thieves and victims. Honest work is ennobling and empowering for everyone. Modern slave masters. Quote, to be a poor man is hard, but to be a poor race in a land of dollars is the very bottom of hardships. W.E.B. Du Bois. Master and slave dynamics have almost always been racial or cultural in nature, a fact that has not changed even in our present, quote, civilized age. Recent years in the U.S. have witnessed a rash of police brutality largely targeted at African Americans, and it seems the latest act of police brutality was the last straw for a society fed up with the seemingly endless stories of black lives assaulted by police. On May 25, 2020, a 46-year-old father, friend, and brother named George Floyd was murdered by a state police officer. The cop pinned Floyd down with a knee to the neck, executing a 9-minute slow-motion homicide in broad daylight with citizens onlooking helplessly. Remember, truth is the end of all inquiry. In the digital age, the windows of perception have become exponentially multiplied, thus projecting the light of inquiry into prismatic and interpenetrating patterns. This multi-perspective quality of digitized existence is an accelerant to the truth-finding function of free markets. Consider the role of digital technology in the Arab Spring uprising, WikiLeaks, and now the George Floyd protests occurring worldwide. In 1965, when Martin Luther King led a protest of unequal voting practices in Alabama, police violently attacked the activists as they marched. Although many events similar to this had come before, this one was televised, and that made all the difference. With the eyes of the world watching police brutalize peaceful protesters in real time, the U.S. government was soon pushed to pass legislation banning racial segregation and discrimination. Free market capitalism is a social system in which we see the world through as many eyes as possible, via words and prices, to attain a high-resolution picture of reality. In the digital age, this multi-perspectivism of markets has been amplified with smartphones, social media, and live streaming, thereby further awakening our collective consciousness. The truth is that thousands of tragic stories like George Floyd's have unfolded over time, but the distribution of his via social media sparked a global outcry against police brutality. In the past, murders like this went less noticed, but in modernity, the murder of one man can ignite a fiat slave rebellion the world over. George Floyd's murder spreading like wildfire on social media and erupting into a conflagration of protests worldwide is testament to the refractive influence of digital technology on the light of inquiry, and thus, the discovery of truth. In truth, police are protectors of government, quote, property. Their job is to keep the peace while the state maintains its scheme of constant confiscation from fiat slaves. Police departments in many southern U.S. cities began as slave patrols tasked with assisting landowners in recovery and punishment of runaway slaves, thus preserving the property rights of slave masters. Even today, the job of police is to investigate crime by collecting information for the court, not to protect the lives of citizens. As the axiom goes, quote, possession is 9/10 of the law. So clearly the police, a group of militarized fact-finders, are truthfully nothing more than glorified government henchmen. The light of inquiry melts down lies to reveal truth. This is why central banking will fail. It is critically dependent on ignorance, fear, and the suppression of free choice. It cannot stand the galvanizing gaze ever present in the digital age. Centralized counterfeiting operations will not be tolerated in a world with unprecedented access to knowledge. Before being killed, George Floyd was arrested for attempting to use a counterfeit U.S. $20 bill. the same crime the Fed perpetuates, by the trillion. Millions, billions, trillions. It's easy to say these numbers, but much more difficult to comprehend the actual magnitude of state-sponsored counterfeiting operations. A visualization will help. I encourage you, if you have not seen it, this is an image showing the magnitude of what $1 trillion looks like. And there's an excellent video on YouTube that will step through the entire process of comparing $100 and a $10,000 wrap of bills upwards to the entire debt of the U.S. government. If you haven't seen it, it's absolutely mind-blowing, and I will have the link available in the show notes as well as under the post on Twitter. Every U.S. dollar printed is proof of time stolen. A visualization of U.S. national debt gives us some sense of just how colossal the central banking system of institutionalized time theft has become. Remember, society always slides towards slavery when a privileged few are able to produce money more cheaply than everyone else. As such, a free world is forever beyond reach before central banking is eliminated. As sickening as it is ironic, George Floyd was pressured to use a counterfeit $20 bill precisely because the Fed counterfeits U.S. dollars at scale. Again, the economic character of money directly influences moral standards. Fiat currency pyramid schemes are premised on proof of theft, which pushes people to rent-seek, steal, and deceive others to make ends meet. Inflation impacts the poorest among us the worst, which explains why the median wealth held by a black family in modern America is less than 10% of that held by a white family, $17,000 to $171,000, and falling. As Michael Krieger describes this systemic weaponization of debt-based currencies, quote, rather than empowering people, it turns them into modern-day indentured servants, endlessly stuck on a hamster wheel with little to no hope of getting off. This is not an accident. It's a tried and tested tool, which, when combined with incessant mass media propaganda, is an effective way of creating a submissive, confused, and desperate underclass. End quote. By buying Bitcoin, you are participating in a global protest against state-controlled currency pyramid schemes in a way that politicians cannot ignore, since money is the only voting system in which your voice cannot be muted. Although none of us were given the choice of what state to be born in, thanks to Satoshi Nakamoto, we are all now free to choose our own money. The first step on this journey is self-education. It is no coincidence that state-owned curriculum teaches us nothing about the origins of money or how it works. Thankfully, the internet is a treasure trove of resources if you know where to look. Check out some comprehensive reading here. Again, free markets are economic games played for the purpose of finding truth, and market manipulators are lying cheaters. In this sense, the Fed is like a professional sports franchise that can effortlessly score points at the touch of a button. A malicious team that doesn't play by the same rules as the rest of us. Facing an invincible opponent like this is clearly demoralizing for other players in the marketplace, who are constantly robbed no matter how well they play. Money is a game played for keeps, and it involves the highest stakes imaginable. Human freedom. Counterfeiting currency is a mechanism of slavery. By breaking the central bank dominion over money, Bitcoin is an emerging emancipatory force for a world suffering under fiat bondage. Chasing Starlight. Quote, I prayed for freedom for 20 years, but received no answer until I prayed with my legs. Frederick Douglass. Making haste under starry skies, aided by stalwart abolitionists, escaped slaves in the antebellum South risked everything to flee northward as they attempted to cross into the free states of Canada. Finding true north could be challenging at times. Fortunately, there were many clues, like moss growing on the north sides of trees or the northbound flight paths of migrating birds. That helped runaway slaves in their quests for freedom. Perhaps the most crucial of these clues was the North Star, which, unlike other heavenly bodies, never changes position in the night sky. Gaining stealth under the cover of darkness, intrepid former slaves relied upon the fixity of the North Star to light their pathway to liberty. Operating under conditions of dire uncertainty and never knowing who to trust, this celestial torch, a true lodestar, served as the guiding light for the Underground Railroad, a network of secret routes and safe houses providing safe passage for runaway African Americans into Canada. Anti-slavery activists like Harriet Tubman supported this volunteer-based, flexible, and covert network that was so instrumental in undermining the heavily enforced institution of slavery in pre-Civil War America. In modernity, we once again find hope of overcoming the financial slavery imposed upon us by the Fed in a volunteer-programmed, open-source, and cryptographically clandestine network guided by its own North Star, an immutable supply of 21 million Bitcoin. For runaway African slaves, the North Star suspended high in the heavens beyond the reach of vengeful masters was a gift from God, an indistinguishable light for liberation. Bitcoin, a free market money with a supply firmly fixed at 21 million, is the unclosing gateway for fiat slaves escaping economies controlled by central banking. Acceptance of Bitcoin is the manumission of humanity from central bank bondage, once and for all. We are all living witnesses to the incineration of institutional falsity by unstoppable, honest money. Bitcoin is a burning star of sincerity, engulfing the enforced fiction of fiat currencies everywhere. From the ashes of this phoenix immolation, a society structured on the sound principles of accountability, honor, and integrity can arise. As an implementation of absolutely truthful money, it is a luminous beacon that cannot be coerced or concealed. As Buddha taught us, quote, three things cannot be long hidden, the sun, moon, and truth. Bitcoin is a rebellion against the most powerful bastion of socialism in the free world, central banking. It is a peaceful revolution involving the permanent disarmament of tyrants who weaponize money to confiscate wealth. Bitcoin is a weapon of peace, the final assassin to time theft, an alchemical archetype. It is an antidote to state corruption and social moral affliction. As a purely honest free market money, Bitcoin is an irrepressible truth, an expression of pure monetary capitalism and a modern-day declaration of independence for fiat slaves worldwide. Bitcoin is a money without masters, a system governed by rules instead of rulers. By awakening the world from the nightmare of financial slavery, Bitcoin is a dream of freedom coming true. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars to change the world. Harriet Tubman. Thank you for reading Masters and Slaves of Money. All right. If you want to follow Robert on Twitter, you can find him at BreedLove22. That is his handle. I will obviously have that link in the show notes, as well as there was actually a whole list of links for further reading that he did when I said you can find here. He's actually got here, 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 and here, and he's got like seven links or something right there. I'll actually post those as well as the link to this piece so that you can drop some massive applause for this on his Medium page. And obviously you can find all the other great links. And if you want to support him and stack sats with him, he has got a Swan Bitcoin referral link as well. I'm a little bit up in the air as whether or not I want you to use /guy or /breedlove, but I will let you choose. SwanBitcoin.com/breedlove is his referral link. All right, so before we dig into this one, let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and we will get back into it. So I think the key takeaway from part two is the utter importance to understand that we do not live under capitalism. You know, if we do not properly understand or take notice of the source of the bulk of society's problems, we are doomed to both repeat them or make them worse in our insane efforts to try to correct them. And this has been the tragedy of revolutions throughout history. And from the looks of it, the conflation of the socialistic monetary system that we have today with free markets, where our corrupt monetary system has an inescapable effect on every aspect of our lives, on every industry and every major company and corporation across the economy, and even our very culture, that this could lead to a worse solution than the current problem. You know, if Bob is poisoning the river and Tom is using his time and money to clean it up, and because of Bob's waste, he's got enormous profits, and because of Tom's efficiency and help in trying to clean up the river, he's got no money, and the community is propagandized to believe that Bob is their savior and Tom is their enemy, then it doesn't matter how mad people are about the poisoned or dirty river. It doesn't matter how organized they are about fixing it. The river is not going to get cleaner. It is likely to get worse. And it's good to see, you know, like Breedlove says in this, talking about how people are, you know, there's this huge spread of information, and the internet has led to so many divergences of thought and exposed so many crimes and abuses of people in power and the police and state in general. I can't help but see these as great developments, that these are really good things. But when I see many of those same people completely misunderstanding where the solutions are, or turning around and asking for more laws and more government involvement and more control over the money, I think it's fueling its own destruction. We're killing Tom and putting Bob in charge of all of his resources. You know, without Bitcoin, I'd have a hard time seeing any way out of this. It's absolutely critical that people understand the problem, and the monopolization and control of our money is the most insidious form of institutionalized theft that exists today. You know, taxation, you know, ask me all day, taxation is theft, absolutely, but it's at least explicit. I have 1,000 terrible things to say about taxation, but at least I'm told what it is. At least it's listed on my pay stubs. At least I have the opportunity, as weak and pointless as it may be, to vote for some arrogant piece of crap who could potentially stand in the way of making it, of increasing it. But the Fed, a non-elected group of bankers who we don't even know who the shareholders are. Think about how batshit that is. Over whom we have absolutely zero say. Who explicitly work to obscure what they are doing, who propagandize their role as if it's here to balance out the animal spirits of the normal person who would cause economic chaos without their godlike power to fix us and our stupid ideas of what to value in our lives, what dream to work for or to achieve. How dare us? What they do is steal time. And that stat is calculating that they have invoked through an unchecked authority the equivalent of enslaving 12 million people for 40 years straight. That is insane. They have enslaved to their ends, to institute their vision of the world, to assign value to their political friends and institutions with our work. There is no liberty and there is no solution to our problems without facing this core problem.
This is the beginning of all of the other issues. And not only is this a great theft, but it literally poisons everything good about society slowly at the exact same time. It corrupts everything throughout the society, as he talks about in part one. And I love that analogy, that there's this inherent morality, that immorality, excuse me, that grows from multiple incentives in an inflationary environment. And the example he gave of the winemaker having to water down their wine, which, you know, we see in that the shrinkflation chart about the candy bars. This is happening all over the place. We can see this. The weight and size of candy bars going are dropping while their price is increasing. It causes companies, it causes the product itself to attempt to defraud their customers or risk losing business to the companies that do defraud their customers. It literally benefits those who cheat more sneakily or lower the products of the quality of their goods the fastest, while simultaneously benefiting debtors at the expense of savers. The more responsible the company, the less successful they can be in that environment. That is an insidious and terrible incentive to put at the base, the fundamental layer of an economy. It's money. But there's actually another increasing immorality that spreads throughout society. It makes a game of being close to the political class, to having political influence. It creates entire industries of companies that produce nothing for society or specifically produce low-quality, bad products, but who stay close enough to the political spigot that they're propped up, they're given impossibly cheap loans, or bailed out despite horrifically irresponsible or flat-out fraudulent behavior. And it puts the company in an adversarial position with their customers, where they are having to alter their product and hope that their customers don't notice. It literally encourages them to lie to their customer, and the company that does it the best gets the fresh debt faster than the rest of them. And we've seen this multiple times throughout history. Like, this is the story of dying money. The quality of everything declines rapidly on a historical timeline. You get cheap cardboard houses, low-quality plastic products, appliances that break in a third of the time, overcomplicated designs with tons of technical debt from past versions. You know, like, it's never necessary to take the time to go back to the drawing board to make significant efficiency improvements, but instead, companies and products just slap new features on the old misarchitected base to produce this year's model and get that fresh that fresh batch of new money. That even when the economy is in debt at 5 times our collective savings, that even when the average worker has barely a few $1,000s, companies have no incentive to seek out efficiency and truly think about frugal, solid, long-lasting products, because the debt will get devalued, interest rates will be pushed lower, and the poor will keep chasing their way back to zero. And most painful of all is that it damages those furthest from real assets. The poor are explicitly those who have to rely on money. They have to rely on the most liquid, most divisible asset in the economy. That is what money is. It is supposed to be a hedge against uncertainty, and instead it becomes a one-way ticket to despotism. It literally becomes a guarantee of loss of value. And it hits the poor at a far greater magnitude. I've talked about this numerous times on the show. The Chapwood Index estimates that across major cities, the real inflation rate of just buying everyday goods, it's like the top 500 goods that are purchased, is around 10%, sometimes higher, sometimes a little bit lower. But 10%, 11% is pretty average. This perfectly explains why the middle class is dying and the poor are getting poorer and the rich are getting richer. Because the assets go up disproportionately. Not only does it mean that the assets go up in relation to inflation, but it actually props up their very market. It encourages more of the middle and upper class who are trying to protect their wealth to buy more assets than they normally would. So a 10% inflation environment doesn't make the assets Like real assets go up 10%, it probably pushes them up 15%. It props up the very market, which wouldn't need middle-class buyers. It wouldn't be important for them to invest in stocks. They would just hold money. Without needing to do that, investors would be investors. And workers, a plumber would be a plumber, a teacher would be a teacher. Everyone wouldn't have to put their money in stocks or some hard asset to keep it from bleeding value for their entire life so that they had some semblance of a retirement after working for 50 years. While the poor obviously have no assets to begin with, that's what makes them poor, and now they're even further from affording them because the market of those assets is inflated while their fixed wages decline in value. And the debts of the lower classes, while all the assets and incentives to go deeper into debt trap them where they are. And the very goods that they need, the educations that they need, the cars that they need to get around, the houses that maybe one day they could afford, go up massively in price and trap them for decades in debts. It reduces mobility. It destroys the ability to quit a bad job. It leads to the deterioration of conditions in jobs all across the country. It leads to the deterioration of benefits and wages. It leads to employees feeling helpless and at the mercy of their employers. And think about it. If they get a 5% raise at the end of the year, their wages still buy them less. They got a pay decrease. Just like pitting companies against their customers with trying to be sneaky and lower the quality of their products, it pits employees against their employers, which is supposed to be a mutual relationship. It shifts the responsibility of receiving a living wage onto the employee instead of the employer. Think about it. If we collectively produce a 5% surplus at the end of the year, like as a society, as the economy, if we are 5% more productive, we have 5% more capital goods, well, then the money should buy us 5% more. Prices would decrease. It'd be just like we see in computers, except it would be on everything, education, cars, housing, blah, all of it. We would be 5% more wealthy on a fixed wage. So our share, we're sharing that productive value with everyone who has produced and saved, i.e. didn't consume it and do nothing. You know, that's the closest thing we can get to the cartoonish idea of socialism, that we would share and have a collective goal that we could ever hope for. We can't, like, that is what a voluntary economy is. And in that way, we all by default are sharing in that. We are getting a 5% raise at the end of the year without a raise in our salaries from a wage that doesn't move. Think about how crazy it would be if a static wage bought you more every year. It would be the end of fighting every 4 years over minimum wage. There would be no such thing. It would be a silly idea. If minimum wage was ever set, it would forever be a living wage, and it would only get more valuable over time. Obviously, because we're producing more over time. We're producing so much more than we were 20 years ago. The economy has never been more productive. How could we be getting poorer? And this means that the employer, as the value of money goes up, the employer is on the defensive. They are the ones with the responsibility. They have to go to the worker in order to potentially lower their wage in order for them to not get paid a fair earnings. You naturally get paid more every year, and you never have to chase a decent wage. You are being lifted toward it constantly. But in the reverse, where you have to bargain for a 5% raise while losing 10% of your value every year, that makes it your responsibility, instead of the employer's, to balance out that loss. And to simultaneously pushing the workers and the poor deeper into debt, destroying their savings, and making a static living standard more and more expensive, is to put the worker in a position where they are forced to bargain and simultaneously taking away all of their bargaining power. They can't quit their job. They can't afford their mortgage, their car payment, their student loans. and the rest of the ridiculously overpriced liabilities that have been shoved on them, if they don't get paid for a month, they're desperately trying to find the first available replacement for the crap job that they already weren't getting paid enough in. Now, if they had savings, if prices were constantly falling, if their wages were getting more valuable as the economy and themselves were getting more productive, an arrogant, self-centered boss would be out of employees in a tenth of the time, and irresponsible, destructive, fraudulent businesses actually go out of business. You know, I tweeted the other day that we can't simply say that all of society's ills, you know, can just be placed at the feet of our monetary regime. You know, like, obviously society has problems. Obviously society has conflicts. There's no escaping it. But not one of our problems can be disconnected from it. Everything that would be a problem in a natural economy, a sound money world, is made far worse in a bad money economy, in a fiat system. And thousands of problems that wouldn't exist, or more importantly, would be incredibly short-lived and self-correcting, are instead fed like a cancer and sustain themselves for decades, multiplying throughout all of society. It cannot be understated how destructive of a system this is. It truly is a form of slavery, and it's time to fix it. We have a solution. It is literally here in our lap. We have the opportunity to try it. We have the opportunity to learn about it. We have the opportunity to protect it. We have the opportunity to live through the time where there is a sustainable solution to this incalculable problem. And that's hard to beat. Do not lose sight of why we are here. And a massive thank you to Robert Breedlove for putting this piece together. Just an amazing write-up, and just resonates on so many different levels. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I will have a unabridged full copy of it sometime this week. I don't know if I'm going to get it out tomorrow because I'm going to be away on Friday and Monday. So I'm going to try to get something done so you guys have something really good to listen to in the meantime while I'm away. So don't forget to subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. And of course, if you want to support this show, you can become a patron at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy. That is me. I am The Cryptoeconomy on Twitter and, of course, Bitcoin Audible. You can find me under both of those handles and both of those URLs. But if you become a patron and or donate on at the bottom of the website at thecryptoeconomy.com, shoot me that invoice. Or, of course, just shoot me a message on Patreon. And as little as $1 will get you into the Cryptoeconomy crew, where we hang out and talk with a bunch of Bitcoiners about all kinds of craziness. In fact, a lot of people have donated recently, which is awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. In fact, I had a listener who donated 1,000,000 sats just the other day to encourage me to read this piece. And just a massive thank you to everybody who has. And if you shoot me a message, please do so. I would love to invite you to the Cryptoeconomy crew and or the Bitcoin Audible army. Name is up in the air right now because we're not the Cryptoeconomy podcast anymore. But we got so much more to come. And I am just loving this, and I'm feeling like there's a bull market on the horizon. It's and the stage is set for needing Bitcoin more than we have ever needed it before. So, you know, it's really our responsibility to get the word out there that this is a sustainable solution. This is a real solution, and that where the real core, where the source of our problems truly come from, we need to make sure that we don't make it worse in our effort to fix it. And we finally have a clear path forward on how to keep that from happening. So, hope you guys share this out with everybody you know in the world. Not just the Bitcoin space, but everybody who needs to hear about the great immorality of our time and bring us to a future where we can reach the separation of money and state. And that is why I am here, Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. If you aren't auto-stacking your Bitcoin, go to swanbitcoin.com/guy, and that'll get you $10 free to start off, and it gives you the lowest cost, safest auto-buy Bitcoin savings plan out there. And of course, if you want to come to BitBlockBoom, get that sweet 30% discount with offer code CC. And I will see you guys there. All right, everybody. Until next time, I love you all. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.